And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And, of course, right at this part of the show, we always take some time out for some commentary. And it's my pleasure tonight to present a commentary entitled Party Pooper by Earth First Radio's long-lost commentary person, Oak. So here it is, Party Pooper.
Celebrations are an important part of life. They are meant to be happy, memorable occasions. Unfortunately, many of the celebratory trappings of your basic, 4th of July, birthday, or wedding here in the USA spell disaster for other life forms. The old saw, anything worth doing is worth overdoing, applies here in spades. But we'd like to think that if most people were aware of the consequences of their during moments intended to be joyful, they would modify their behavior. Right? Maybe. Traditions, be they recent or as old as dirt, have a way of becoming entrenched. Take fireworks. They're so much a part of the 4th of July or other celebrations as to be synonymous. How can you have an Independence Day or the tall ships come in without fireworks? Today, every backwater town in the nation wants to have its own fireworks display. Regardless of who has the means or even why they put out all the effort, it's the what of those pyrotechnics that's the problem. An article in the recent edition of Earth Island Journal carries some serious eye-openers with regard to what all those airbursts have in store for anything that breathes. The contents of your average fireworks display read like a air quality expert's worst nightmare. Apparently, all those swell colors and effects come with a price. Some examples. Strontium produces blazing reds. Copper compounds burn blue. Magnesium, titanium, and aluminum create brilliant white sparks. Sodium chloride produces orange yellow fire. Boric acid burns green. Potassium and rubidium compounds produce purples. And burning lithium glows red. Glittering greens are produced by radioactive barium. If Acme Earth Trashers Inc. were to burn all those things out back of the factory, the EPA would be all flies on shit. But those guardians of our air and water are not about to make a stink about fireworks displays. That would be akin to regulating mother and apple pie. Besides, as abusers and every far-right enemy of the Earth has gone on record already claiming the EPA's new regulations on air quality will outlaw backyard barbecues and fireworks. EPA Director Carol Browner made a big deal of denying that last year. So, the bombs bursting in air and the rocket's red glare will continue unabated. The All-American Birthday Party will continue to dump heavy metals and arsenic into the skies. The Earth Island article notes that the Millennium fireworks last winter in Europe shot 124 tons of lead into the air, while here in the U.S., Y2K partiers added another 90 tons. That's a violation of the Clean Air Act. Remember lead paint and leaded gas? They were banned, and for a good reason. Can anyone tell us why it's okay to blow the stuff up over our communities, but not blow it out our tailpipes? In any case, after you've recovered from those pyrotechnics, maybe it's time for a little barbecue. What? There's a smog alert? Okay, forget the cookout. How about a birthday party for Susie and Johnny? Tie those helium balloons to the mailbox? I don't think so. Whatever you do, if you live anywhere near the coast, keep those suckers inside. The Federal Task Force on Persistent Marine Debris identifies helium balloons as, quote, a non-necessary pollution item, a major source of debris which threatens the lives of marine mammals, close quote. It seems that whales, seals, dolphins, turtles, and some fish and seabirds mistake balloons and other floatable plastics that land on the ocean for their natural prey, like the jellyfish. Upon swallowing, the materials become lodged in their gullets or digestive system, usually leading to death. The U.S. Coast Guard and others have testified that up to 100,000 whales and seals die from this each year. Happy birthday. Rounding off our party pooper's peeve session, we thought we'd throw some cold water on that wedding party. It seems butterfly releases are becoming rather vogue at nuptial ceremonies these days. This may make a nice show, but unfortunately it cannot go so well for our winged friends. According to the North American Butterfly Association, www.naba.org, the American Museum of Natural History, the National Wildlife Federation, and the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, butterfly releases are lame. NWF notes flies can result in the possible introduction of species into areas where they are not native, possibly carrying and spreading diseases. Even if a species is native, a foreign population has a different genetic makeup than the population into which it is introduced. This might result in negative effects on local populations. And they add that introductions are not the solution to dwindling butterfly populations. Habitat conservation and the elimination of pesticides from the food chain are better solutions. So, we think Ashley and Jesse should pass on the butterfly concept. If they must release something alive at their ceremony, obviously they can't release balloons, why not that person up front with the Bible or whatever? Let them go home. They don't need the church to give them permission to be together for eternity anyway. For Earth First Radio, this is Oak.
And we want to thank Oak very much for his commentary this week. Getting right back on into news, the Roundup sale has been dropped in Oregon. BARC has received written confirmation that the Roundup timber sale has been canceled. For those of you who followed the Roundup saga, Roundup was connected to Salmon Curve sale, which has also been dropped, and both sales emanate from the Abbott Salmon Environmental Assessment, which proposed cutting trees on the edges of old rectangular clear cuts so they don't look so bad from Timberline Lodge. Roundup was half cut 2 winters ago, but the biggest, oldest trees are now protected, albeit with no guarantees from future cutting. Barkers who have come on barkabouts in Oregon may remember counting the marked trees in these units a year ago. Here are the vital statistics on the saved forest so far. 86.9 acres, 1.7 million board feet, and innumerable species. So, good news from Oregon. All right, that seems kind of a strange concept, to cut down more old growth to make clear cuts look less rectangular. A team of marine experts is attempting to capture and transport 2 bottlenose dolphins believed to be a mother and a calf in near Seabright, New Jersey. The scientists have been monitoring them in the Shrewsbury River since September 9th. The team hopes to locate and move the pair to the open ocean so they can make a normal migration south for the winter. If the dolphins need medical care, they will be moved to the National Aquarium in Baltimore, a rehabilitation facility. The clock is ticking from the minute we have contained the pair, said Larry Hansen, a longtime standing responder and former National Marine Fisheries Service dolphin biologist who will lead the national team. The less time they are out of the water, the better. National Marine Fisheries Service provides coordination and oversight for Marine Mammal Stranding Network, but the operations themselves are conducted together with various partners in the network, most of whom are volunteers. The animals have been tracked through sightings made by volunteers and staff at the New Jersey Marine Mammal Stranding Center. And the appellate division of the New York Supreme Court has upheld a lower court's ruling that Sour Mountain Realty had violated the state's 25-year-old Endangered Species Act when it tried to build a fence dividing rattlesnake habitat just as surely as if they'd killed the critters with a shovel. In this case, the fence was thousands of feet long and designed specifically to exclude eastern timber rattlesnakes from the property. The eastern timber rattlesnake is listed as threatened under the New York State Endangered Species Act. In this first test of the state law, all 4 appeals court judges concurred that, as the Albany Union described it, quote, messing around with the habitat of an endangered or threatened animal is tantamount to destroying it. The judges also dismissed the takings claim brought by Sour Mountain. The ruling is also likely to put a damper on the company's plans to mine 52 million tons of stone from the property, since it has yet to get a mining permit, and the Department of Environmental Quality has discovered a den of pregnant rattlers there. Unfortunately, the decision may still be appealed. And the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection has approved the Maxam Timber Harvest 1-00-031-HUM last week, despite questions from the California Department of Fish and Game and numerous local citizens. The timber harvest plan proposes to cut 24 acres of old-growth forest in groves that dot the prairies on Long Ridge. The plan is 10 old-growth Douglas fir units mixed with mature hardwoods. Logging of these units will generate landslides below them into the North Fork, as well as remove important northern goshawk, golden eagle, peregrine falcon, and northern spotted owl habitat. Local citizens are rallying to purchase the lands from Maxam and privately protect them in perpetuity through a community land trust. Humboldt County resident Daniel Ersman filed a lawsuit in Humboldt County Superior Court challenging the approval of the plan and asking for a temporary restraining order. Unfortunately, the plan is not expected to be heard before Monday, when logging can begin last Friday. If you'd like more information, contact Timberwatch at 707-839-1534. That's 707-839-1534. The Maxam out of Matole Media Desk at 707-629-3599. That's 707-629-3599 for more information. The Colorado butterfly plant, a rare short-lived perennial herb, has been listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. The only known populations of the Colorado butterfly plant are found within a small area in southeastern Wyoming, western Nebraska, and north-central Colorado. With less than 50,000 reproducing individual plants remaining, only 10 of the 14 current populations are considered stable or increasing. Non-selective herbicide spraying, haying, and mowing at certain times of the year, some water development, land diversion for cultivation, competition from exotic plants, and the loss of habitat to urban growth are the main threats to the plant. The low numbers and limited distribution make the plant vulnerable to natural and human-caused disturbances and environmental stresses. Two populations of the Colorado butterfly plant occur on the F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Wyoming. In 1990, a research natural area was established to include all the known populations on the base. The rest of the populations are on private lands, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plans to meet with landowners to develop agreements to provide protection for the plant. And in California, we read, a diverse array of wildlife ranging from bees to mountain lions may soon be affected by a disease that is killing tan oaks, live oaks, and black oaks, say scientists from the Wildlife Conservation Society. The researchers have conducted a preliminary assessment of sudden oak death syndrome, documenting the widespread nature of the problem, and believe it may affect dozens of wildlife species. The Wildlife Conservation Society is concerned that the potential effects of the disease on acorn leaf and flower production and consequences it may have on the food chain. Species that rely on acorns as a critical food source include black bears, deer, several squirrel species, the acorn woodpecker, scrub and Steller's jays, and game birds like California quail and the band-tailed pigeon. The loss of tan oaks and true oaks represents an urgent ecological problem far more daunting and profound than the horticultural aspects reported to date, said WCS conservation scientist Dr. Steve Zack. The WCS team assessed the presence and absence of symptoms of the disease on more than 8,000 tan oaks and other oak species throughout the oaks range this year. The researchers discovered the disease is evident in over 350 miles of California coastal forest. Next spring will be particularly telling, as symptomatic but still green trees are likely to die throughout many regions where the problem is presently difficult to detect with the casual eye. And no longer will off-road vehicles blaze through trails on the Algodones Dunes in Southern California. A settlement between a coalition of environmental groups and the Bureau of Land Management has set aside 48,000 acres of the dune ecosystem to protect a threatened plant. Pearson's milk vetch is a silvery, short-lived perennial plant, a member of the bean family. It can grow up to 2.5 feet tall. It produces small purple flowers generally in March or April on stalks of 10 to 17 flowers per stalk. Pearson's milk vetch is the largest seeds of any milk vetch, an important adaptation to its dune habitat. Pearson's milk vetch, the large seeds provide a greater reservoir of food and enable a seedling to grow a greater distance toward energy. In the United States, the plant lives only on the Algodones Dunes. The agreement limits off-road vehicle use on the Algodones Dunes, milk vetch, and other imperiled species. The BLM agreed to ban off-roading on about 48,000 acres of the 150,000-acre dune ecosystem, the largest in California. And In a case that could have major ramifications for environmental protection in the U.S., the Supreme Court heard arguments recently pitting the federal government against an Illinois solid waste agency that wants to locate a trash dump in a remote wetland area. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers blocked the landfill because it would destroy habitat where migratory birds breed, claiming authority to do so under the Clean Water Act because the dump would affect interstate commerce, notably the bird watchers and hunters who travel across state lines in search of species found in the wetlands area. The waste agency, supported by dozens of business groups that filed a friend of the court brief, argued the wetland in question is a special case because its pools were actually formed by past mining activity and are therefore unconnected to the national network of lakes and rivers the U.S. EPA and the Army Corps are authorized to protect. And with help from the Rainforest Alliance, some farmers in Ecuador have pledged to grow cocoa without cutting down rainforest lands and earn the right to be labeled rainforest-friendly. Within a few weeks, the cocoa, the first to be certified, will become available to U.S. manufacturers. And we're talking about the base of chocolate here. We're not talking about cocaine. Cocoa, as in chocolate milk. Environmentalists say cocoa, like coffee, grown alongside or in the shade of rainforest trees, making it a much better product for biodiversity than other tropical crops like bananas or cattle, which require the land to be deforested. However, even though there has been a surge of interest in organic and other forms of eco-friendly chocolate in recent years, most operations around the world don't grow cocoa trees in environmentally conscious ways. One researcher estimates that two-thirds of the cocoa grown in the Ivory Coast of Africa, which produces about 40% of the world's supply, is grown without shade. And in keeping with ancient tradition, Hopi Indians would be allowed to gather and smother golden eagles from the Wapaki National Monument in Arizona under a proposed Interior Department rule expected to be announced next month. Environmentalists fear the proposal would set a broad precedent allowing Native Americans to hunt and trap animals in national parks throughout the United States. A recent survey of 40 large parks by public employees for environmental responsibility found that half of them had received hunting requests from Native tribes. The taking of wildlife in national parks and monuments is usually limited to congressionally approved conservation research. This issue is causing strife within the conservation community, which is frequently allied with Native Americans. And a population of endangered gorillas living in the national park in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo has dropped by half due to the ongoing presence of rebels, according to the Bronx Zoo-based Wildlife Conservation Society. Situated along the border of the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda, Kahuzi Biega National Park has become a battleground with a variety of rebel groups fighting in the area. This has resulted in many rebels and refugees taking up residence within the park's borders, where they continue to harvest bamboo, a key gorilla food source, for building materials and hunt large amounts of wildlife for food and trade. The number of illegal snares has jumped fourfold, the Wildlife Conservation Society researchers say. Conducting wildlife surveys last June in Kahuzu Biega National Park, the World Heritage Site, biologists from the Wildlife Conservation Society and the Congolese Research Center for Natural Scientists found just 130 endangered eastern lowland gorillas known as Grauer's gorillas in their study site, down from 245 counted in the same location in 1996. The team also found that forest elephants have been totally decimated in the area. The number of elephants was estimated at 9,000. In 1989. And here in California, a planned expansion of the Fort Irwin National Training Center in Southern California aims to avoid damaging habitat for the endangered desert tortoise. The Departments of Interior and Defense have released proposed legislation that will enable the expansion of the training center in full compliance with environmental laws. The proposed legislation would allow for the expansion of the training center to the west and east, away from the sensitive habitat of the desert tortoise. The proposal requires that additional lands cannot be used by the Army for training purposes until all requirements under the National Environmental Policy Act and the Endangered Species Act have been satisfied, according to this press release. And the California Department of Fish and Game has reported that several hundred thousand young salmon and steelhead died during a fish kill last June. The report raises the original estimates of the fish kill by at least 10 times. It says that two fish diseases related to warm water were responsible for the fish's death. Hatchery and wild steelhead and Chinook salmon were found dead by the thousands, the report states, and federally protected coho were probably killed also. The deaths were reported along the 60 miles of river between Coon Creek and Pequon on the Klamath River. At the time of the mid-June fish kill, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation reducing the amount of water it releases from the Iron Gate Dam, one of several that make up the Klamath River Project. The project provides water to irrigate 240,000 upstream acres of barley, alfalfa, potatoes, and wheat. Then the Klamath is the second largest river system in the state of California. And a rare toad is preventing Tanzania from realizing the benefits of a hydropower plant. The Kahansi Hydropower Project in the Udzungwa mountain range in the southern highlands of Tanzania was completed last April and consists of three 60-megawatt hydro turbine generators with a total capacity to generate 180 megawatts. Tanzania's large mining and tourism investments have pushed demand for a power in the country to over 550 megawatts, but the output from the national grid varies from 225 to 416 megawatts. So the Kahansi project is vital. Standing in its way is the rare 1-inch Kahansi spray toad, which needs waterfall spray to survive. Fully operational, the dam would dramatically cut down on the natural spray produced by the waterfall. This would decrease humidity and increase temperatures. Could be enough of an alteration in the local habitat to cause extinction of the species. While relocation plans for the toad are being discussed, the Tanzania Electric Company has devised a temporary artificial water spray that delivers 2 cubic meters per second. The toad, Nectarophenodes aspergillus, was discovered living at the base of the Kahansi escarpment in an area less than 200 meters wide. It is thought to live only in Tanzania and believed to be oviviparous, which means it lays eggs. The Tanesco source said last week that environmentalists and the World Bank want the Kahansi Power Project stopped from operating at full capacity until a relocation program for the toad has been worked out. Why don't they just move the damn dam? That's Uncle Dennis. That's my comment. Anyway, we've run out of time news this week. If you'd like to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com, that's cruzef@cruzio.com, or send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California 95061. And be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. Please, please, please. If you want more in-depth news or information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their 20th anniversary issue has just been released. Their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And congratulations on 20 years, journalistas. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Go to the and that's Pacific time. Go to www.microradio.net/FRSC and download the player, then listen in. There are lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime, and you can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net, and the software you need to play MP3 files is available free on the website or anywhere else. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to broadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 5 years on the air. Portions of this newscast were prepared with the help of Stefan and Eon. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to a song by Casey Neal. This one's off his Paw Prints cassette, and it's called Resistance.
There are those with good hearts who do what they feel to be right. There are those whose souls have been twisted by the power of might. For money or for stature, they hold all others down. They hope you look the other way as they tie the chains so tight. To weaken us, they numb our minds with drugs and alcohol. So we're so high we don't notice when we fall. And the TV tells us all is well that we live in a free state. In the face of this destruction, we must retaliate. Resistance, resistance, resistance. Sing the song, sing the song, sing the song.
As they tear apart the earth, they tear apart our souls. Drilling for oil, logging for lumber, and mining for coal. But the trees are not for feed, and the mountains are not for sale. And the power of a river's not a power to be controlled. They say that we need these things to live in our excess, and the scientists assure us all is well they have assessed. But behind their eyes you can cut through their lies, see that they've hidden the mess. Resistance, resistance, resistance. Sing the song, sing the song, sing the song. So if you see the truth of how they are literally killing time, you must take action against the wrongs. If you don't, it is a crime to look the other way when you know all the while that our hair being lost to the bottomless pockets of the slime. For the struggle of the people, for the struggle of the land, for the sake of our grandchildren, we all must understand that we must fight for our livelihood and fight for all we know, or the future will be washed away with the tides ebb and flow. Resistance, resistance, resistance. Sing the song, sing the song, sing the song. Hear the wailing of the ghosts as they walk the trail of tears. Hear the voices of Turtle Island crying for 500 years. The massacres continue since Columbus landed on the shore. You don't know what it is to live until you have something to die for. Hopeless in the hands of a higher way. Then the blood will be on your hands too, no matter what you say. For only the weak give up hope, only the weak make them strong. Rise for the love of life, rise and seize the day. Don't think that the world cannot be changed by the conviction of a few. For the life force is on our side and we will break on through. To make a world wild with glory generations down the line. Earth, justice now, it's up to me and you. Resistance, resistance, resistance. Sing the song, sing the song, sing the song. Resistance, resistance, resistance.